the liturgy presents us with a fascinating combination. On the one hand, this is the Elijah Mass, and so the readings focus on a man who's fascinating in his own right, Elijah the prophet. And then on the other hand, today is the feast newly placed on the calendar of Our Lady of Loreto, which is fascinating as well because it's not only a devotion to Our Lady, but a devotion that is that centers on her home life in her house in Nazareth, which is now, according to the tradition, in Italy, the Holy House. So Elijah was taken up in a whirlwind and he's going to come back. The Holy House was taken up by angels and plopped down on the eastern coast of Italy somewhere in Loreto. And so both of these stories have a kind of miraculous character to them. I hope we can get some fruitful reflection on this for our Advent, our own Advent journey. First of all, I think it's important to take the Church's stance toward miraculous events, neither denying the possibility of the miraculous nor accepting every claim to the miraculous. The Church has a kind of healthy skepticism about claims that are about miracles. But it doesn't say it can't happen. It says, sure, it can happen, but let's just check it out. So when it comes to Elijah, it's pretty hard to determine what really happened because that's a long time ago. When it comes to the Holy House, they have done some scientific studies on this little building in Italy and have found that there's evidence that the stones in the Holy House really come from someplace around Nazareth. So that part at least has some scientific basis. Now, how those stones got from the Holy Land to Italy, that's another question. The tradition is that angels carried the house. The more scientific explanation is that some very devout people of the Middle Ages, Italians, took the house apart, stone by stone, put it on a ship, or on ships, and then brought it to Italy and then reassembled it exactly as it was. Well, that's also pretty, you could almost say that's miraculous in itself. But the Church's attitude is, okay, don't close the door on the miraculous because that would be to close the door on God acting in history. And that certainly would violate some of the most basic truths of our faith. Here we are in Advent. We're preparing for the day of God entering into time in the incarnation, celebration of Christmas, and we're preparing for him to come again in time, at the end of time. So we can't say that God doesn't work in time, but that would deny everything. Let's go back to Elijah for a moment. In today's gospel, the disciples, that's Peter, James, and John, are coming down the mountain of the Transfiguration. They have just seen Jesus transfigured in glory, and they have just seen Moses and Elijah, and they are really overwhelmed with the experience. And as they're coming down the mountain, they start saying, well, wait a minute now, what's this business about Elijah? Why do the scribes say that Elijah must come first? And that was the expectation of the Jews that Elijah would come again before the appearance of the Messiah. Since Elijah was taken up, he didn't die, well, he must be around someplace that he's going to come again. Now, we think of that as a kind of a historical curiosity, a very interesting story from way back in the days of old. But the Jews didn't think of it like that. They had prophetic messages that said Elijah would come again. The era of the prophets, in Jesus' time, the era of the prophets seemed to have ended. For centuries, there were no prophets until all of a sudden, John the Baptist shows up and everybody claims him as a prophet. It's pretty obvious. He dresses like a prophet. He talks like a prophet. He looks like a prophet. He looks a lot like Elijah. And so speculation was just rampant that Elijah was going to come. Maybe this guy in the desert was Elijah. Maybe this guy, Jesus, was Elijah. There was all kinds of speculation. Remember when Jesus asked them, who do people say that I am? And they said, well, some people say you're Elijah, because they knew Elijah was going to come. So they asked Jesus about this, what's this about Elijah coming? And he says, Elijah will come, and Elijah has already come. Very puzzling thing to say. It's a way of talking that goes beyond our literalistic, our historical categories. It's a kind of mystical language. Elijah will come. There's a future event that we look forward to. Elijah has come, but not Elijah the man, Elijah in the figure of John the Baptist. And that's what they understand by the end of this reading, that Jesus was talking to them about John the Baptist. Perhaps it would help us to get to remind ourselves of the more Jewish way of looking at history and time and memory. The Jews have handed on to us the way of treasuring memory in such a way that past things remain present with us or become present with us when we remember them. A more modern view is that past things are past and water under the bridge, and you know, that's gone now. That's not a very healthy way of thinking about the past. I remembered, as I was reflecting on this, that scene from The Lion King. You know that movie, The Lion King. The main character is Simba. He's the son of the king, the lion. And then, but Simba, I think that's his name, he feels guilty for the death of his father, and he leaves. He goes off into the jungle, and I'm just going to leave my old life behind. I'm a failure. And so he tries to live as if that, you know, is water under the bridge. Starts living a life of ease with his new friends. And then, I don't remember how the story unfolds, but there's this kind of wise man figure, this chimpanzee or baboon or whatever he is. And he realizes that Simba is still alive, and he goes to see him, and he says, you know, you're the king. You can't just hang around here. You've got a job to do. And Simba says, no, I can't do that. That's all in the past. And Simba's the baboon figure is trying to convince him to take on his rightful place and his real identity. But he can't get past this argument that's all in the past. So he knocks him on the head with his stick. And Simba says, hey, that hurts. And then the guy says, yeah, but that's in the past. So me hitting you on the head is a thing of the past. It doesn't matter anymore. And Simba says, but it still hurts. And then the baboon says, yeah, that's the whole point, isn't it? I mean, what's in the past, yes, it's in the past, it happened before, but it still has impact on us. It still affects our experience of the now, our identity now, and also our destiny. So that's maybe not too well related, but I'm trying to get to this point that the Jews understood time this way. There's no such thing as that's in the past and it doesn't matter. That there's no such thing as that. What's in the past is part of what God has already done, and God has already revealed, and it is part of who we are now and what we experience now, and it's also part of where we're going. And this is a very good Advent way of thinking. In Advent, we think about past, present, and future. The Lord has come, the Lord is coming, the Lord will come again. That's an Advent approach. Okay, so here's Elijah. He did come, and he had an extraordinary ministry as a prophet. And then he was taken up in the whirlwind. That's in the past. Elijah will come again. That's the expectation of the Jews. But here's John the Baptist right now fulfilling the role of Elijah, coming again, preparing the way for the Messiah. So here we are. We're in the middle of Advent. We're reflecting on these figures from way back. Elijah was a long, long time ago. What? Almost 2,000 years ago. John the Baptist, no, more than 2,000, because John the Baptist was 2,000 years ago. Elijah was almost 3,000 years ago. So John the Baptist about 2,000 years ago. And then we're here now, 2022. Well, Do those things way in the past have no meaning for us? No, that's the wrong way to think about it. But we have to say, they're not just historical details or interesting facts from the past. These men, these stories, these revealed truths speak to us now about being ready for God to act in our life now. Now, the same thing happens when it comes to the Holy House of Loreto. I've never been there, but it's a very popular devotion. When people go to that little house, which is enshrined in a big basilica, so it's not just a house and sitting on the side of the road, it's really in a place of honor, but it's still a little stone house, nothing particularly grand about it. But when people go there, they realize that they are under the care of the Blessed Virgin Mary. They experience being connected to the Holy Family. Their faith comes alive that they are part of what God did and is doing now. So it's not just a museum piece, it's a contact point for meeting the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, Joseph. People prayed, over the centuries, have prayed there. That's where the Litany of Loreto comes from, the Litany of Our Lady. They pray there and their prayers are answered. They find that this shrine is a place where our life is affected now. So you see this connection of past, present, future. And this is what I think this liturgy wants to instill in us, this awareness that the things of the past which we can call to mind are part of our journey now, and they give us hope for the fulfillment of God's promises in the future. This is to keep us moving on the right path. Don't give up. Don't deviate. Don't think that it has no meaning. Don't get discouraged. Keep on preparing the way, because the Lord is coming. Keep on opening your heart to what God will do and what God is doing, because God has been doing this all along. God doesn't give up. He doesn't want us to give up either. So this is how we prepare the way, with the help of Elijah, with the help of John the Baptist, with the help of Mary and Joseph, always with our hearts focused on the coming of the Lord Jesus.